Support for State Week comes from the following sponsors: Visit Springfield, PI.org, and the Illinois Education Association.
From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
The Illinois Accountability Commission has wrapped up its hearings and issued a final report. What does it say and what comes next? Also, the former Illinois House Speaker Michael Madigan's appeal of his federal conviction was turned down. We'll talk about that and more coming up on State Week. I'm Sean Crawford in Springfield. Our panel includes Charlie Wheeler, Professor Emeritus and former Director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. Charlie's also been a longtime reporter and observer. And our guest this week, good to have with us, we have Maggie Doherty, a reporter with Capital News Illinois. Maggie, thanks for joining us on the show.
Hey, Sean. Thanks for having me.
Maggie, a state commission, this was formed after Operation Midway Blitz in the Chicago area. That's the immigration enforcement operation that happened last fall. It's finished its hearings, as I mentioned, released a report, a 200-page report. It documents various incidents, calls for local law enforcement to investigate and maybe even possibly file charges. This is a pretty big deal. Could have some big ramifications, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing early on was this concern about the commission not really having teeth. You know, it doesn't have subpoena power, and it doesn't have a lot of the investigatory tools that a law enforcement, you know, apparatus or agency like the police would have. And so the powers that it had, I think, were a little bit in question. But the way that it's decided to offer its recommendations are essentially in the form of this report, and not just the report, but then additionally generating these incident reports specific to these kind of flashpoint incidents around the Chicagoland area and in Elgin that they have now sent to those local law enforcement and to the state's attorneys in those areas. It's not a determination of guilt of agents' misconduct, but it is saying, you know, to us, there seems to be a reasonable case to be made that these agents broke either their own agency policies or state and federal criminal law. And here is a bunch of evidence that we collected, you know, sort of handing it off to those agencies and saying, please now you carry forward an investigation to potentially prosecute those agents. So that's pretty major. And then it also sets forth a lot of recommendations for preventing this in the future, essentially. So those include things like not allowing agents to wear masks or hide their identities or engage in these kind of what they deemed in the report as paramilitary tactics, not do roving patrols where you're scooping people up based on racial identity or language or other things that are not really targeted indications of a crime occurring. And then also recommendations at the sort of leadership level about how to hold these folks like Stephen Miller and Kristi Noem accountable for things that they've said in the media that turned out to not be true and that never got, you know, carried back or walked back, you know, like calling Miramar Martinez a domestic terrorist, the woman who was shot 5 times by federal agents when she's really just a teacher's aide at a Montessori school here in Chicago. And, you know, attributing quotes to her about wanting to go beat up Customs and Border Patrol agents that were from an entirely different person in an entirely different case, but they said that she said them, even though I think that they know that that's not true. And, you know, their tweets to that effect are still up. So that's a big part of the commission's report as well, is looking at how do we have accountability at the leadership level from somebody like the former head of Border Patrol, Gregory Bovino, was really clearly setting the tone for a lot of these raids in the Chicagoland area. And how do you prevent that at a higher level? Because that kind of culture does permeate through the rest of CBP. And so now you have Amnesty International, USA, for example, who's called for Congress to look at this report closely and called for the Trump administration to look at this report closely and integrate those findings, and also suggested that other states model commissions on Illinois. So, you know, the commission wanted to be a first-in-the-nation sort of path-bearer, and I think that other states are looking at Illinois to potentially follow that lead.
Yeah, Shirley, some of the things that were outlined in this report, we've been following reporting from Maggie and even others that have, you know, covered these hearings. So some of this was known, at least what some of the evidence was that was being presented and the testimony. But to see it all together, I mean, it is a report that does require, I think, people to take a closer look at what their government has been doing.
Yeah, and it kind of summarizes what a lot of us thought all along, was that this was basically a lawless operation. Agents came in and their object was not necessarily to enforce any law. It was just to scare the dickens out of people of color, people who maybe had a Spanish accent, and basically unsettle the community, which they did. And the apologists for them, the flacks for Homeland Security, lied through their teeth every time there was an incident. They would come out and defend the ICE people. And then, you know, a day or so later, here would come this video that, oh, it didn't happen the way that ICE said, and the way that the people in Washington said, oh, yeah, you got to believe these guys. No, it was totally different. And I think it was best summed up. The chair of the commission, former Judge Ruben Castillo, said, and this is a quote, "Documenting this was easy," he said. They interviewed more than 60 people, reviewed more than 100 hours of body camera footage from 250 videos, did all of this work to put together all of this information. He said, "Documenting this was easy. The record is overwhelming. The videotapes are overwhelming. They're devastating. They're shameful. They are brutal." And I think that kind of summarizes for me what the whole operation was. And as I said earlier, I thought the purpose of it all was to instill fear in the neighborhoods. It wasn't to root out the evildoers and the worst of the worst and the rest of that nonsense that came out of D.C. It's basically to scare people into submission, I guess. And I think the commission has done a very good job of documenting all this. Now, as your story suggests, Maggie, the ball is in the court of people who actually have the ability to prosecute some of these things. And I believe that this report and letters were being sent to local law enforcement agencies for prosecution of some of these agents. And I think some of the people who were documented in here certainly are worthy of being prosecuted.
Well, Maggie, what is the likelihood we could see some prosecution? I know that, for example, the Cook County State's Attorney's Office seems to have been a little lukewarm on this idea at one point, but maybe with this report, maybe they feel they have the backing to do something.
Yeah, it's a good question. I don't know if they would classify their own approach as lukewarm. They have said that they recognize how devastating Operation Midway Blitz was to Chicagoland communities and frame it as sort of a practical question of firstly, they say, you know, we don't have the power to prosecute a case before it's been, you know, investigated. So in their mind, the Cook County State's Attorney, this is a issue of the law enforcement needs to do it first. You know, whether that's the Evanston Police Department, the Chicago PD, the ISP needs to investigate these cases and then bring them to us for fear that there's kind of a maybe political motivation argument that could be made if the state's attorney was to do an investigation on their own, and then that they could get overturned. You know, opponents of that framing say, well, there's no chance of them being prosecuted if we don't start somewhere. And, you know, there's always a risk that a prosecution gets overturned for this reason or that reason. Judge Ruben Castillo, the chair of the commission, is part of that coalition that is pushing for a special prosecutor to be put in place of the Cook County State's Attorney, Eileen O'Neill Burke, so that they can prosecute these cases specifically. He said quite plainly and directly in the commission hearings, you know, in his personal capacity, he feels that the Cook County State's Attorney should either have some courage or step aside. Now, in another jurisdiction, Kane County State's Attorney has said that she won't prosecute these agents, but for a different reason entirely, that the Supremacy Clause of the U.S. Constitution prevents her from doing so. So, you know, whether these things get brought forward, I think it's going to depend on whether the police departments are willing and able to investigate these, you know, crimes or potential crimes, and then bring them forward to the state's attorneys. The Cook County State's Attorney's Office did release a statement saying that they look forward to reviewing them with law enforcement partners. So, you know, maybe, and maybe this report puts a little more pressure to look at that.
Yeah, there are certainly people out there, I think, have a belief that the agents in these types of operations have some type of immunity from prosecution. That's not necessarily true, but you mentioned that supremacy clause, for example. That could cloud things in people's minds, maybe some of these local prosecutors?
I think so. The fear that, like, federal agents are kind of, especially in their capacity when they're on duty, are off limits in a way. Like, the feds have to take action there, and the states don't have the authority to do that. I think that is the argument that they're making. I think, you know, there's probably an argument to be made against it, but it's one that I think can maybe be a shield, if they want it to be, from having to take forward these prosecutions.
You're listening to State Week.
Support for State Week comes from Visit Springfield, featuring dozens of attractions and overnights on Route 66 in the capital city. Springfield is home to numerous Lincoln sites, Frank Lloyd Wright's Dana Thomas House, the Illinois State Capitol, and more. The Visit Springfield team can help organizers plan their event in the capital city. Attractions and tourism information at visitspringfieldillinois.com.
We're back on State Week. I'm Sean Crawford in Springfield, along with Charlie Wheeler and Maggie Doherty with Capital News Illinois. We are talking about the Illinois Accountability Commission report that was released this week after the hearings, testimony that was taken over the last several months. Charlie, Governor Pritzker had indicated at one point he wants this to also be a document that can be used as an historical record. And is that the way you view it as well?
Record of what, again, and this is my judgment, so were incredible abuses perpetrated by the Trump administration in Chicago. And you look at what happened in other cities. Now, the damage done in Chicago was not as horrible as in Minneapolis, where ICE agents murdered two innocent people. But the record makes clear that these guys dressed up in their masks, no identification, and they thought they were sort of immune. They could do whatever they wanted, and they lorded it over people. And they were trying to intimidate people, just scare them. And for example, the person who shot a school teacher, Miramar Martinez, he claimed that, oh, she tried to run over me. But then video showed that she was moving away. And the ballistics report showed that actually the shots were fired from behind the car as she was moving away. And so he flat out lied. And then he bragged about it, about, hey, I got her. And it's just horrible. In my mind, what ICE did in Chicago and elsewhere was a black eye for law enforcement in general. And they ignored judicial rulings. They acted like an independent force, that they were answerable to nobody. And I would like to see some local prosecutors file charges against some of these guys. And they might say, well, we're not sure if we can convict him. But look at what the feds have done, all the charges they filed against protesters that have been thrown out of court. the fact that you may not win doesn't mean that you shouldn't file charge when somebody has actually committed a criminal act against an innocent civilian.
Maggie, before we move on, I guess my thought with this, like I asked Charlie there about this being an historical record. So even if nothing does come from this, even if there is no prosecution, this report is going to be there. It's going to be there for future generations to look at.
Absolutely. And I think that's always been part of the philosophy around it. And they've not just had these public hearings, but they've also done these individual neighborhood private listening sessions. I think they did 7 of them in total. And in those, they really were able to speak to people who might not feel comfortable speaking in front of a big public room or where there's, you know, press like me there. And that way they were able to get these stories from people in the immigrant community who have otherwise not felt comfortable to come forward and share their stories. And it would be much, much harder, you know, even 6 months, a year down the line to track down people who are around for these kinds of things and get their testimony. So it's kind of a snapshot of this, you know, little period in time from September, October, November last year in Chicago and in around the area that will be there. And if, you know, there's a change in administration or other political will, there could be prosecutions further down the line. So I think that it does serve that purpose. And I think that I'll just add, the commissioners were really moved when signing off on, you know, they voted unanimously to approve the report. They were all quite emotional in talking about how all of them could see, you know, this happening to a family member. For one commissioner, the shooting of Silverio Villegas Gonzalez, which was the one fatality at the hands of on-duty ICE agents in Chicago, occurred 2 blocks from his parents' house. And others got emotional, saying that their daughters are the same age as Miramar Martinez and could see that in her. And so I do think that they put a lot of energy and time into making this report. And I don't think it went and made it into my story, but Judge Castillo did say, you know, I've been a part of a lot of different things in my many years as a judge, but I think this is essentially the finest work that I've been part of. So it will persevere in that way.
All right. Well, we'll continue to follow and see what happens from this report. Let me move on. Earlier this week, we also got the news that the former Illinois House Speaker Michael Madigan, who's being held in a federal prison, he's been there for about 6 months, convicted as part of what prosecutors said was a bribery scheme. Well, Madigan, he had appealed his conviction, but Charlie, the appeals court that heard this case rejected his motion to try to get out of prison at this point, overturn his conviction. Were you surprised by that?
Not really. And it was a pretty overwhelming decision. And it was a pretty quick turnaround, too, in the sense that the appellate court heard the arguments from Madigan's attorneys asking that his convictions be overturned. And that was just a couple of weeks before they ruled upholding the 10 guilty verdicts that sent Madigan to prison. They said there were no errors in the way the jury was instructed. There was a mountain of evidence the government used to prosecute the influential Democrat during this trial. And I'll give you a couple quotes from the opinion. It was written by Judge Michael Scudder, who was appointed by President Trump. He wrote for the panel, "Michael Madigan spent nearly a decade leveraging his power as one of the highest ranking public officials in Illinois in exchange for over $3 million of financial benefits for his close political allies. The linkage was clear and far from pleading. He repeatedly facilitated changes to state law impacting countless energy consumers in Northern Illinois, all because ComEd funneled money to the right people." Going on, "Madigan insists that this was run-of-the-mill politics," Scudder wrote. but a jury of 12 Illinois residents saw evidence differently. So do we. And as a result, it appears Madigan will have to serve the rest of his term. He reported last fall to a medium security prison in Morgantown, West Virginia, and his current release date is scheduled for 2032, when he would be nearly 90 years old. Now, there are a couple of things at play. One is Madigan's attorneys could appeal this to the Supreme Court, U.S. Supreme Court, and the other is a request was made for a pardon to Donald Trump, and that was made last year, and we've not heard anything since. So presumably, the only hope for Madigan getting out early is either for the Supreme Court to overturn what the appellate court said, or for Trump to give him a pardon. Oh. It was interesting because one of the arguments that was made was, well, there was no quid pro quo, and there was a Supreme Court case that made it clear that gratuities aren't bribery if they occur after the fact, unless there was some kind of agreement ahead of time. And the judge said there did not have to be an agreement signed at a sit-down meeting. The jury could reasonably infer from this mountain of evidence that Madigan conspired to receive bribes. The jury received overwhelming circumstantial evidence that he agreed to help ComEd at a price in 2011 and then stayed the course through early 2019. So there didn't have to be a signed agreement, according to the appellate panel. There was no agreement signed at a sit-down meeting, but there did not have to be. So as I say, it appears, barring intervention by the U.S. Supreme Court or by President Trump, Mike Madigan is going to be in West Virginia for the bulk of the next several years.
And he just turned 84 years old here last month. You're listening to State Week.
Support for State Week comes from the members of the Illinois Education Association, serving 135,000 members of educators and support professionals around Illinois. IEA's mission is to promote excellence and equity in public education. When schools and communities unite, we all win. Resources and membership information at ieanea.org.
We're back on State Week, and our guest this week, Maggie Doherty with Capital News Illinois. Maggie, there was some legislation that had been floating around trying to get a ballot measure, actually a constitutional amendment, on the ballot this fall, and it had to do with voting rights. It was going to change the redistricting laws in the state, but apparently that's not going to happen now, and it's because of a U.S. Supreme Court decision, which many people say is a real serious blow to the Voting Rights Act of 1965. It was a key provision of that law when it comes to dilution of minority voting power. Again, this is a landmark decision in itself, and it looks like Illinois is going to hold off maybe at least another couple of years before they try to do anything.
Yeah, well, I guess the only thing is that I think they're constrained by the legislative timeline at this point. I mean, they have a May 3rd deadline to approve constitutional amendments for voters to consider, and that's obviously this Sunday. They're not going to make that timeline. But that amendment would have inserted a provision from the Voting Rights Act into the state constitution and specifically direct lawmakers to consider race in drawing district lines. But I think that they just feel now that that would be maybe too at risk, and the court, I think Senate President Dan Harmon said that the ruling, quote, highlights how much the court would frown upon race being a predominant factor in drawing districts. And so I think that that's going to just be saved for another time down the line, if at all.
Yeah, I would argue that it'll have no impact on Illinois at all, because what basically the high court is saying is, and they've already said it in an opinion several years ago, gerrymandering for partisan reasons is okay. It doesn't offend anything. And so in Illinois, you can create a gerrymander to protect black voters, and you can argue, well, they're Democrats. We're expecting them to be Democrats, and so we designed it to elect Democrats. And that's going to be why I say it won't have much impact in Illinois. Where it will really hurt those in some of the southern states, where the basically the remnants of the Confederacy are still powerful, and so they're going to go through, and they're going to rip apart any black districts. And let's say there's a black district that's like a square, they'll cut it up into pieces and put it into white districts to make it harder for minorities to actually elect people. And as a historical note, it occurred to me this may go down in history as sort of the modern equivalent of the Dred Scott decision or the Plessy v. Ferguson decision of generations ago.
Well, it's time now for our notes from the field. And Maggie, we'll start with you this week.
Yeah, one thing that I've been watching is there's a bill in the General Assembly right now which would reclassify gambling disorders and gambling addiction under the Substance Use Disorder Act. It's kind of a normalization bill to recognize that gambling disorder is, in fact, you know, a disorder with the same kind of compulsions as substance use. It would allow there to be more treatment options in the state for gambling disorder. And I think that as our state and nationally is looking at a real increase in access with gambling disorder, or with gambling, you're going to see more disorders. And so whether or not we have the resources available there to treat that is going to be a big question.
All right. And Charlie?
Well, here's an update of sort on where things stand with the Bears. They had a virtual meeting with the NFL Stadium Committee earlier this week to provide updates on the potential sites in Arlington Heights in Illinois and also in Hammond, Indiana. They're going to meet again virtually in another couple of weeks or so. They also are going to give a stadium update at the NFL's quarterly meeting towards the end of the month in Orlando, but they are urging Springfield to act quickly. As you know, the House approved property tax legislation last week. It's now in the Senate. And so Governor Pritzker, the Bears, and numerous others have said that the legislation approved by the House needs tweaks. And in some cases, it's a lot more than tweaks. But and the governor also said there's a need for speed here. We need to move somewhat expeditiously. Now, Indiana, meanwhile, is sitting there roughly $1 billion in public financing for the Bears should they choose to go to the Indiana site just across the state line near Wolf Lake and Hammond.
Still things to do before the end of the legislative session at the end of May. That's all the time we have for this episode of State Week. Our panel included Charlie Wheeler and Capital News Illinois' Maggie Doherty. Look for State Week where you get your podcasts through the NPR app and at nprillinois.org. I'm Sean Crawford. Join us next time.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capitol by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.
Support for State Week comes from PIORG, a nonprofit consulting firm providing resources for strategic planning, best practice implementation, and outcomes-focused program evaluation across the country, helping organizations make data understandable and actionable, enabling changemakers to strengthen critical skills and serve others more effectively. PI, Plan, Implement, Evaluate. Services and information at PIORG.org.